This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. What up, listener? We wanted to take a second to thank you for listening to this Blue Wire podcast. Be sure to show your support to this pod by subscribing and dropping a 5-star review on iTunes, a follow on Spotify, or the appropriate dApp for any other platform you might be listening on. And if you're enjoying this show, chances are you'll like one of our 75 other sports podcasts. Find more shows you'll love at BlueWirePods.com. Thanks again for listening, and now back to your regularly scheduled podcast. Welcome, everyone, to another exciting edition of the Hardwood Knox podcast. This is the long-teased, long-awaited, semi-daily, mostly daily mailbags that we're going to be providing for you. In addition to a regular episode with Dan and I every week, we will also provide a bunch of these solo shows that are just answering questions from you. We've kind of thought that with the great response that we get to all the mailbag tweets, we always end up leaving out a lot of good questions, and we feel bad about that. And this is going to be a way for us to not only answer those questions, but to just provide you guys with more of the good quality content that you have signed up for on your preferred podcast medium or outlet, whatever we want to call it. Anyway, we're going to dive in to a mailbag. Before we do that, of course, we've got the usual housekeeping notes. Rate, review, and subscribe to the show. If you've done that already, make sure and tell your friends and family to do so. We sincerely appreciate all the support we get from the listeners, and sincerely appreciate your efforts to help us grow. So anyway, let's dive in. We are in the midst of trade deadline week here, so it's been fun to follow all the rumors. If anything crazy happens as I'm recording, I probably won't be able to help myself and react to it. So we'll see if that happens. Maybe you'll get a live reaction to a trade from me. All right. First question that I will field for this semi-daily mailbag episode comes from Kevin Cold. His Twitter name is Kev. His handle is KevinCold4. I should have done a little bit more prep as I'm looking at this question. Top five players in the NBA right now. What a way to kick this off. You're gonna get a very raw, unfiltered response from me on this question. I think number one right now is probably Giannis. I don't think that's going to be shocking to anyone. Maybe top five isn't that hard now that I'm thinking about it. Giannis, I don't know if I can do particular order other than him. One thing I always think about when asked to do rankings or just trying to, you know, do my own rankings is it's incredibly difficult to pick, you know, one player is better than the other. I think at this level, all these guys are so, so close. I think Giannis is probably definitively number one right now. But then, maybe this is cheating, but there's a next tier that I would say has James Harden, LeBron James, Kawhi Leonard. Maybe Damian Lillard is sort of threatening that tier right now. If there's a tier below that, those guys, it's maybe Luka Doncic, Damian Lillard, Jimmy Butler, Nikola Jokic, Anthony Davis is probably in this tier. Yeah, I think so. I've given you more than five at this point, but if I had to narrow it down to the top five guys, I think number one is Giannis. Just incredible what he's doing this season. I think people are starting to recognize how little he's playing, but that's one of the most alarming things to me is he's playing about 30 minutes a game and still putting up the numbers that he's putting up. When you look at what he's doing on a per possession basis, and let's do that right now just so that I am not spouting some nonsense. So if you go to Basketball Reference, Player Season Finder, you switch stats to display to per 75 possessions, and you switch the franchise to the Bucks, and we'll say the 2019-20 season. We will sort them by wins over replacement player. And now we've got Giannis, of course, leading the team, but here are his per 75 possession numbers. And so I've explained this to a bunch of people on Twitter, but essentially this is just, think of it as per 36 minutes, but with the added element of pace. So that's the reason I use per 75 possessions. This sort of normalizes the numbers out to what a starter might play and levels the pace. Because if you try to compare a player from today to, say, somebody from 20 years ago, the numbers are inflated today compared to 20 years ago because they played much slower back then. They were less efficient. So anyway, that's why I add pace. Long-winded way of getting to the fact that Giannis Antetokounmpo is averaging 33.5 points, 14.7 rebounds, 6.4 assists, 1.2 steals, and 1.2 blocks per 75 possessions. Just absurd numbers. 60.8 true shooting percentage. He's just been out of his mind. And I, you know, Chris Middleton, I'm looking at the Bucks roster now, and I can't help but mention him too. He's not in the conversation for top five, but he's another guy who's numbers are severely depressed by how little the Bucks have to play their main guys. They've just been destroying teams. It's sort of like the 2015-16 Warriors, where the stars just don't have to play a ton of minutes. Middleton's at 24 points and 5 assists per 75 possessions, and his true shooting percentage is 63.2. They're just out of their minds. So I think Giannis is a clear number one to me. With Harden, you've got the incomparable scoring. What he's doing, as difficult as it can be to watch, and I sympathize with the people who don't enjoy it. I'm generally one of those. Just the constant parade of trips to the line and the little tricks and antics that he knows to draw fouls. Those are not easy for me to watch. But it's undeniable that he's just a phenomenal scorer. LeBron James, the remarkable thing about him, of course, is the age, that he's still doing what he's doing is just outrageous to me. And he's clearly, I know there was some buzz early in the season about Anthony Davis maybe being the Lakers' best or most important player, but it's not close to me anyway. I mean, it's still clearly LeBron James, the leader of that team on both ends even. I would say he's maybe even the leader of them on defense. See if I get some pushback on that. Then we've got Kawhi. I don't know if I want to put him... yes, he is in this same tier, but based on what he did in the postseason last year, I feel like he's cruised maybe a little bit this season. He had a real hot run here recently where his numbers kind of recovered. But maybe it's not quite the same level of like night to night dominance as those top three guys. But we've seen obviously what he can do when he locks in for a sustained stretch. He just had the hot stretch I mentioned. And of course, his run through the playoffs last season. And I think number five, I'm going to round it out with Luka. I think it's close between Luka Doncic and Damian Lillard. What Lillard has done lately is just unreal. He finally cooled off a little bit against Denver here this week, but it was just run of 40-point games, 50-point games, shooting, you know, off ball screens 10 feet from beyond the line, just doing things that are mind-boggling. Like some of the stuff he's been doing lately is even a little alarming for those of us who paid close attention to Curry in 2014-15 and 2015-16. He's just been out of his mind. But I think if you're looking at the season on balance, probably Luka, number five. And I guess in a way I'm kind of providing a top five players this season. I think it would be my same list if I'm just asked who are the five best players in the league right now. It'd be Giannis, Harden, LeBron, Kawhi, Luka, and again, really no specific order after Giannis, who to me is number one. All right, Kev, wow, way to get me ranting and raving on that first question. Patrick Stewart at @prof_x_sons. He asks me about the thoughts on the possibility of Kennard in Phoenix. And I like it. Dan and I talked about this trade or possibility, this potential trade, I guess I'll call it, on a different episode. I've been running Bleacher Report's trade rumors tracker in the afternoons this week, and when that rumor hit, my initial reaction was just sort of confusion. I didn't really know how to feel one way or the other about it. But as I kind of wrote about it for a minute, I think my feelings on the potential deal crystallized a bit, and I actually started to really like it for Phoenix. I think, you know, Kennard can do a little bit as a playmaker. Booker can do plenty as a playmaker. So I don't even think you'd need a conventional point guard out there with them. You might want one for defensive purposes. And so Rubio can provide more defense than either of those guys can. Although he's not like a lockdown perimeter defender himself. He's probably better than those two. But offensively, I think I would like it most with Booker and Kennard as sort of a positionless backcourt. Both can shoot, both can create shots for themselves, both can create shots for others. I really like that combination. I think they'd be very difficult to guard. If we look at Kennard's per 75 possession numbers, he's at 17.5 points, almost 5 assists per 75 possessions, just under 3 threes per 75 possessions with nearly a 60% true shooting percentage. So he's another guy that's I think he would just fit really well with the Suns. I understand their desire to go after him. Ty Yeager at Ty Yeager Radio. What do you think about the Rockets possibly trading Capella and maybe going without a center for the rest of the season? So like I said, I'm currently following these rumors as they're unfolding, and it's looking more and more likely that they will trade Clint Capella. The most recent tweet from Sham Sharania of The Athletic, I'll just pull it up so I don't misquote him. Minnesota, Atlanta, Houston are in serious discussions on a deal that would send Robert Covington to Rockets and Clint Capella to the Hawks. Evan Turner and draft consideration involved in current talks to Timberwolves, potential fourth team too. I wouldn't be surprised if we get the actual deal, a notification on that tonight. When you hear like these teams are in serious discussions, they're down the road, that's generally sort of a forecast that it's about to happen, at least when you get those tweets from guys like Shams or Woj. So it sounds like it's close. And the other rumors that have been floating around are that Minnesota would love to turn around and redirect whatever assets they get to the Warriors and, you know, get D'Angelo Russell. It seems like things have cooled on that front to a degree, but maybe they're just thinking, well, let's pull off step one now and we'll worry about step two later. I honestly think by the time Thursday comes around, and I think I even tweeted this, I think Minnesota eventually gets up to Golden State's asking price. I just think they're going to be desperate. They know they've got a superstar under contract already and they want to keep him happy. There's already been rumors floated about Karl Anthony Towns and teams monitoring his situation, even though he's under contract through 2024. So I think they're going to do what they can to make him happy. And I think getting D'Angelo Russell would make him happy. Now, I've steered way off course from Ty's question. Let me try to get back now. Obviously, part of step one is Capella. Is part of that three-team trade. From Houston's perspective, I kind of get it. I think they will probably sign someone to at least fill some center minutes. And I guess Isaiah Hartenstein, maybe they think that he's ready for some more time at the five. They're going to rely heavily on small ball and positionless ball for a while if they don't have Capella, but they're going to need some size at some point. They ended up winning this game, but they were playing the Hornets this week and were getting killed on the boards by the Hornets and were down comfortably in the first half. There's just such a gap in talent there with James Harden that they were, you know, able to eventually come back and win that game. But it underscored a potential weakness that they're going to have if they go, you know, all in on this philosophy or this strategy. If they face a team like the Lakers, you know, a huge front line, or the Nuggets, you know, the Lakers have McGee, Davis, Howard. The Nuggets have Millsap, Jokic. The Jazz have Rudy Gobert. There's a lot of Western Conference teams that bring a decent amount of size to the table. And so if they find themselves in a playoff series with one of those teams, going with the all 6'6 and under lineup could be tough. So I think they'll probably at least sign one other person, maybe give Hartenstein a few more minutes, but I don't blame them for going all in on this positionless basketball. I think it's fascinating to watch. It's really difficult to guard. I mentioned Utah earlier. In that case, they might even be able to run Rudy Gobert off the floor. They've done it in playoff series in the past with them, and maybe they can do that with some other teams too, but they also certainly run the risk of just getting dominated on the boards. So long story short, I get what they're doing. I don't think it's going to be like 100% in on small ball. They're going to have somebody who can occupy some minutes as a more traditional big guy. FCO Plaza Gajardo at Fran underscore Zapla. You'll have to tell me if I pronounce those names correctly. Biggest NBA All-Star snub this year. And then he says, saludos desde Chile. And you'll have to tell me how terrible my accent was there too. I think Devin Booker is a pretty big one. I sympathize with him. I've got another question teed up about this, but maybe I'll just talk about it now. I think the general reaction of a lot of these players to getting snubbed is it's reached kind of comical levels. Not so much with all-star snubs. I guess I kind of get that, even though I think a lot of those have been over the top too. But when we're like complaining about being snubbed from the Rising Stars game or the three-point contest or the skills challenge, it's just kind of weird. Ben Taylor, who does the Thinking Basketball podcast, talked about this too. It's funny that they use the word disrespect. It's not disrespectful. I'll just leave it at that. Anyway, Devin Booker is a snub to me. That's probably the biggest one. I don't know if there's really a ton of others that you can get bent out of shape about. Karl Anthony Towns has the numbers to be an all-star, certainly, but it's hard to ignore the fact that the guy hasn't won a game since before Thanksgiving or whatever it is. He's on a personal 16-game losing streak. Whether or not you factor winning into your all-star selections is certainly up for debate. But I don't blame people who do, and so I completely understand him being left out. I don't think anybody would consider this guy a snub, who I'm about to say, but he's another guy who statistically has just been phenomenal this season. And this might shock you to hear this if you've followed me for any period of time. Hassan Whiteside has just been unreal this season. He's got a very positive net rating swing. And again, that just means the difference in your team's net points per 100 possessions when you're on or off the floor. And that could be tied to the fact that he plays so much with Damian Lillard. But he's, again, a double-double machine. His per 75 possession numbers, let's pull them up real quick so I don't butcher them or again, misquote anything. He's second on the Blazers in wins over replacement player, and he's averaging 18.5 points, 16.3 rebounds, and 3.6 blocks per 75 possessions. 64.1 true shooting percentage. He's just been phenomenal. Who could have ever guessed I would have used that word to describe Hassan Whiteside? But you can't really put two players from a sub 500 team in my mind in the All-Star game. So that's fine that he got left off. Anyway, I'm actually going to cut myself off here for a moment because, as I predicted, we do have a trade that's gone through. I'll give a brief reaction to this, just sort of as it's coming across. We've got, looks like Shams was first, so I'm going to refresh his feed again real quick. Minnesota, Atlanta, Houston, and Denver are close to agreement. Robert Covington to the Rockets, Clint Capella to the Hawks, Malik Beasley, Juan Hernan Gomez, Evan Turner, and draft compensation to the Timberwolves, expiring contracts, and a first rounder to Denver. Denver jumping in on this is a little surprising to me. Excuse me, I've eaten too many Walmart sugar cookies tonight. I'm just trying to digest this as I record. I guess if you get a first, that makes some sense. I wonder who's sending the first rounder, because it seemed like Minnesota was going to be in the mode of trying to accumulate as many assets as they possibly could to then turn around and flip them to the Warriors. So if they're giving up the first, that's fascinating to me. But Denver getting a first for two guys who've kind of been in and out of the rotation this season, they've had to play more recently because of injuries, and Malik Beasley's been pretty good, and he was great last year. So there's a little bit of hesitance there if you're a Nuggets fan, I would think. Clint Capela to the Hawks. There's been some rumblings this week about John Collins potentially not being like a part of their long-term plans or future, and that's bizarre to me. I think he's fantastic, and I think he would be a great long-term fit at the five for Trae Young. But Clint Capela has proven to be a good rim-rolling big with James Harden, obviously, and Trae Young can certainly get him a lot of open dunks too. Robert Covington in Houston, that allows them to double, triple down on that positionless ball that we just talked about. So, wow, this is interesting. And maybe it's just the first domino. It'll be interesting to see where the picks are coming from, where they're going, whether Minnesota can now repurpose a lot of this and go after Russell. So here, Woj has it too. Let's see. Woj says, Houston gets Robert Covington, Atlanta, Clint Capela, and Nene. Minnesota, Malik Beasley, Juancho Hernangómez, Evan Turner. Atlanta, first-round pick via Nets. And Denver gets Gerald Green. And Houston, FRP. I'm going to expose myself right now. I don't even know what FRP is. First-round pick. So, okay, interesting. So Houston ends up surrendering a first-round pick as well as Clint Capela, and they just get back Robert Covington. That's interesting to me. I can see the logic to this deal for all four of these teams, believe it or not. I'm going to need more time to sit down and digest it before I can like declare winners and losers or whatever, or give it grades or whatever we do in today's rapid reaction culture, but I don't mind it for any of these teams. I'm just really curious to see now if Minnesota can turn all this into D'Angelo Russell. I think that's still probably the end game for Minnesota. Now they've got a good salary matching piece in Evan Turner, and maybe they pair him with a bunch of these picks, and maybe that's enough. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see.
We're now going to take a quick break to tell you about our brand new sponsor, BetOnline. Missed your chance to bet on the Chiefs Niners in the Super Bowl? Fear not, listener. Blue Wire is excited to be partnering with BetOnline to help you win big no matter the time of year. With March Madness, the Masters, and Major League Baseball's opening day right around the corner, BetOnline has you covered for all your latest news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Plus, it's never too early to lay down your future bet for Super Bowl 2021. Head over to betonline.ag and use our promo code BLUEWIRE to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. We signed up. It's super easy. And if you're already making wagers, it's a fantastic way to support this podcast. Again, that's promo code BLUEWIRE, all one word, when you sign up at betonline.ag. Bring your best bets home with BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
Okay, for a little peek behind the curtain, believe it or not, I just took, I don't even know how long, 25, 30 minutes to write about that trade that I just spoke about. I'm not sure I'm any clearer on it now than I was when I was recording 25, 30 minutes ago. that one's going to be tough to wrap my head around, and hopefully I'll have a better handle on it by the time Dan and I do a reaction to the entire trade deadline on Thursday. So I'm just going to leave it at that for now. A wild, wild trade in the NBA. As I was writing, there was just, you know, one report after another from Woj, Shams, even John Krasinski from The Athletic jumped in there. It was just, you know, players' names being thrown out left and right. Jordan Bell's in this deal. He's going to Houston. Kata Bates Diop is going to Denver. Shabazz Napier, Denver. Noah Vonleh is going to Denver. It was just madness there for a little bit. So anyway, I'm just going to have to proceed through the mailbag. Let's see here. At Hefe Sito. Again, let me know if I butchered a pronunciation there. At half a mil for Bale. Is this the most balanced the league has been? I like this question. I thought this coming in to this season, and I think it's proven true. The league is just stacked with talent, and it's very well spread out throughout the league. And I think that's borne out in the standings. I think the top six in each conference, and probably even the top seven in the West, is loaded with good teams. I still think there are, you know, you probably have to put the Lakers and the Clippers and the Bucks above everyone as legit contenders. But I do think there's still six or seven total teams that you could make a reasonable argument for them having a shot to win the title. And we just, that's something that has not really existed at any point in the years that I've covered the NBA or even been a fan of it. Obviously, we're coming off the Warriors dynasty, where they were a foregone conclusion for half a decade. You know, right before that was the Miami Heat. And although they only won two out of the 4 years that LeBron had his big three there, you know, they were clear favorites in all four of those seasons. Before that, there was a mini Lakers dynasty with Kobe and Pau Gasol. The Spurs have always just sort of been an undercurrent throughout the 2000s and the 2010s. You know, go back a little bit further, you've got the Lakers with Shaq and Kobe. Before that, you've got Bulls with Jordan. Generally speaking, there's a team that just dominates for a while. And there are, you know, breaks in between some of those great teams where you get maybe a year or two of parity. And maybe that's all that's going on right now, is just one off year of parity. But it's been really fun for me to follow and to watch this season, because there's so much good basketball. There's so many good players spread out throughout the league. It's a season where, and I'm always this way because I'm just kind of an NBA junkie, but I think more people who aren't NBA junkies could get it like a league pass subscription and just sort of scroll through on any night and find some good basketball, and actually have like a difficult decision, which game do I want to watch? Cause there's so many talented players, so many good teams this season, so many competitive teams, even those teams that are below 500 in the West that are battling for the eighth seed, like typically below 500 team, you'd think maybe not worth my time, maybe not that entertaining, but there's stuff to like about all those teams. Like Devin Booker's fun to watch. I think DeAndre Ayton's underrated. I kind of feel bad for him sometimes that he's in this same class with Trae Young and Luka Doncic, because what he's doing is pretty special too. For a young guy, the Grizzlies have Ja Morant and Brandon Clark and Jaren Jackson, and they're spouting off about Andre Iguodala. They're a blast to me. The Blazers, with this run that Lillard's been on, are a ton of fun. I think the league is about as balanced as I've ever seen, and it's been a blast to cover and to watch this season. Trent Williams at B-Ball Eval. Why is Vorp better than player efficiency rating? So what VORP is value over replacement player. I typically will cite it as wins over replacement player, because I think it's a little bit easier for people to digest. What wins over replacement player is it's a cumulative stat. So it's like points versus points per game, which is a rate stat. And it's really similar to baseball. I think it's more well known in baseball, wins above replacement. It's a similar concept. And the rate version of wins over replacement player is box plus minus. So really the question is, why is box plus minus better than player efficiency rating? And when I haven't always been a numbers junkie. Like, I haven't always been really into digesting numbers, looking for numbers, trying to decipher what they mean. As a guy who played in college as a garbage man type of a big guy, you can imagine a lot of numbers probably wouldn't have been very flattering to me. I mean, I was just sort of an offensive rebound guy, pass it out to the guards. So it wasn't until later that numbers became interesting to me. But one of the reasons that I kind of gravitated towards box plus minus over player efficiency rating is it just seemed to reflect what I was watching a lot better than player efficiency rating did. One of the real eye openers for me with player efficiency rating were some years where Enes Kanter was off the charts. And it just seemed like, is this overvaluing this guy who gives more back on the defensive end than he does than he gets on offense? And Kanter's better now than he was in the early portion of his career. Another one who was, I think I recall a season where Derek Williams was really high on player efficiency rating, and it started to dawn on me that player efficiency rating is basically just a measure of high volume scorers. It really seems to value guys who are that, again, just sort of high volume, high usage type scorers. It does almost nothing to even attempt to measure defense. Box plus minus does a little bit more, but even box plus minus, where it's housed at Basketball Reference, they say that you got to take defensive box plus minus with a grain of salt, because box plus minus is based on box score numbers, and there just aren't a lot of box score numbers that tell us how good someone is on defense. So it's difficult to say that box plus minus is super accurate either, although I still rely on it from time to time. It's good when you're looking at like a multi-season sample, because it's just so easily accessible, as opposed to like real plus minus, which just isn't very easily accessible, at least not for multi-year stuff. Like, if I want to see what somebody's box plus minus was from 2000 to 2010, that's really easy to do. And I think it still gives me a better picture of the kind of player or how impactful that player was than player efficiency rating would give me. It just takes a fuller picture into account, at least from what I've seen. Now, there are numbers now that are coming out that take a lot more information and put it into the formula. Jacob Goldstein from the Basketball Index, he's got a metric called player impact plus minus. And like box plus minus, it's trying to measure just how much of an impact a player makes on his team. And it's essentially how many points above average he's contributing per game. This is hopefully not getting too convoluted at this point, but Jacob accounts for more things than box plus minus does. Like, his is luck adjusted, for example, and he's a math guy, an engineer. I'm not that. I always tell people, I feel like I'm good at identifying numbers and analyzing them. If you want someone to actually build you a metric, that's not me. That's a guy like Jacob Goldstein, who's actually gone to college for math or engineering or whatever he did, and he's built out this metric. And he's very willing to talk to people about, you know, what goes into your metric. What are some of the factors that your number takes into account that box plus minus doesn't? Or maybe you could ask him, why is player impact plus minus better than player efficiency rating? And I bet he would have a very good explanation for that. His Twitter is at Jacob E. Goldstein. Another one that's just come in this year is 538's Raptor. And this is one that some of the results are kind of shocking, but I really like following this one. What Raptor does, it includes on-off data. So, you know, basic plus minus type stuff. How much better is the team when that player is on versus when he's off? It includes tracking data. So, you know, like stuff like shots contested and all the kind of stuff you can find on nba.com/stats. And it includes box score numbers. How they mixed it all together and put it into one catch-all number is, again, that's going to be above my head. I'm a lawyer, and one of the reasons I am that is so I could avoid math classes in college. So to me, I like to follow these numbers and kind of gauge which ones I think are best reflecting what I see with my eyes, which is interesting. I mean, some people have been like, okay, why even watch it? Or why even watch the numbers? Just watch the game. If all you care about is if it'll confirm what you're seeing. But to me, I think there is value in being able to measure things, especially defense. I think it's going to be, it's been a quest for years and years, and it's going to continue to be a quest to figure out how to measure defense. Because for years and years, the things that were most important to people are like points, assists, rebounds, and they don't really give us a great look at what kind of a defensive contributor a player can be. For example, somebody like Shane Battier, he didn't have basic numbers that jumped off the screen, but you knew he was good and you knew he helped his team win. And so you look at him, and even though Box Plus Minus has its deficiencies or shortcomings, whatever we want to call them, it's a number that could identify that Shane Battier was a heck of a player. His career 2.9 Box Plus Minus is a really good mark. I'm going to see where he ranks. Yeah, his career Box Plus Minus is 81st in NBA history. Now, if you're didn't watch him a ton and you just looked at his basic numbers, his career average of 8.6 points, 4.2 rebounds, 1.8 assists, one steal, you might not think, hey, this is a guy who's the top 100 impact player in the history of the game. But Box Plus Minus says he's 81st. All time. And again, you take that with a grain of salt. I don't think anybody would see that and say, oh, Shane Battier is a top 100 player in NBA history. I'm certainly not saying that right now, but there are numbers like Box Plus Minus, like Real Plus Minus at ESPN, like 538's Raptor, like Jacob Goldstein's Player Impact Plus Minus, that try to give us a better, clearer picture of what a player is contributing to his team, other than just the basic numbers that we have. And player efficiency rating deserves a ton of credit because John Hollinger was a pioneer. I mean, he came up with that when a lot of this other stuff didn't exist. And at the time, I think it was definitely better than just points per game, or rebounds per game. Like it was more information. But as is the case in just about every field, and things continue to develop and grow and more information becomes available. And I think basically the analytics movement has moved beyond player efficiency rating at this point. And I think those impact plus minus type numbers tell us a little bit more about a player than player efficiency rating does. Okay, this question's from @FRZK97. His Twitter name is like an emoji. So, sorry, I'm losing my voice. Well, I don't have a Dan to allow me to recover my voice every couple minutes. Will DSJ, Dennis Smith Jr., recover his now bad NBA career? This question's kind of sad. I didn't bookmark this for any particular reason. I was like somewhat optimistic about DSJ during his time with the Mavericks, but it became fairly clear to me quickly that the lack of size, and the inefficiency could be a problem. And typically you can kind of, I won't say ignore efficiency in the first couple years of a player's career, but you don't have to pay as close attention to it as you do later on, because it just takes time for young players and for rookies to figure out how to be effective in the NBA. But he's now going on, is this his fourth year already? Let me double check that. Let's see. Yeah. Third season. Never mind. Okay. So this is his third season. This gets back to the discussion that we just had too. I mean, counting stats wise, you see a rookie who puts up 15-5, and then a second year player puts up 14-5. You think he's well on his way, but his effective field goal percentages were way below average. His assist to turnover ratio was not great, and so his Box Plus Minus is below replacement level. in each of those first 2 years. And now this season, it's atrocious. So a replacement level box plus minus is minus two. He's just barely below that over the course of his first two seasons. Now he's almost at minus six. He's only played 400 minutes this season, but he hasn't shown really anything. And I hesitate in year three for a 22-year-old player to say, yeah, he's done. There's certainly a chance that he can figure some things out over the next few years, but it's getting harder and harder to believe with each passing season. And I think maybe beyond the numbers, what's scariest to me is the size. You know, there's been a lot of talk over recent years about how the NBA is getting smaller. And I think there may be some truth to that with big guys. Although I think a lot of it is just big guys are getting more skilled. We have a lot of guys who are big still. They just now shoot threes and dribble and pass. What I think is talked about less is the game is actually getting bigger at the guard positions. And I haven't done any research on that, and so it could be proven false, but it does seem like playmakers are just getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And that's going to be difficult for DSJ to defend guys like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. He starts at the one. Luka Doncic starts at the one. It's just going to be hard. I mean, there aren't many bulldog defender point guards like Chris Paul who can overcome the lack of size. And it's going to be more and more difficult for smaller players to survive in the NBA, I think. We're trending toward positionless basketball. I think we get a little bit closer every year. And I think when it's truly positionless, it's going to be hard for guys who are 6'2", 6'3", unless they've got like ridiculous wingspan. DSJ obviously has good athleticism, but he's got short arms too. So he's working against some physical disadvantages that just, they may be hard for him to overcome. But I guess to answer your question, can he recover and become like a solid backup? Yes. Will he? I'm a little bit more wary of that. At J Fry PPC asks, are the Jazz legit contenders still? I answered somebody earlier and said, I think it was the question about whether the league is as balanced as it's ever been. I do think I'd still have the Jazz in that group of like six, seven teams that you could make a reasonable argument are contenders, but I'm not as confident about them as I was before the season started. The Jordan Clarkson trade was like a nice Band-Aid there for a little bit, but I still think there are big problems with the bench. The backup center situation has just been awful all season long. I was very high on the Ed Davis signing, and he just might not be a pick and roll guy. And that's a big part of Utah's offense. And they had Derek Favors fill in the backup 5 minutes last year. He's a great pick and roll player. So it's been a difficult fit for Ed Davis. Tony Bradley had like a little flash in the pan earlier this season, but then he fell off and they went back to Davis. So I think I could make the argument because their first five guys are really good together. Even the lineups with Conley, who's really struggled this season, are good. Like Conley with the starters, I mean, are good. The two main starting lineups, which would be Mitchell, O'Neal, Ingles, Bogdanovich, and Gobert is one. And then the other one is Conley, Mitchell, O'Neal, Bogdanovich, and Gobert. Those are both, like, in terms of plus minus, two of the best five-man lineups in the league. So maybe when you get in the playoffs and rotations are tightened up a bit and those lineups play a little bit more together, Utah will be even better. But the way that their bench is just getting destroyed is concerning. And I think it's fair to be concerned about Mike Conley at this point too. I just mentioned how difficult it is for small guards on defense. That's a very real concern for Utah's backcourt. Conley and Mitchell are both listed at 6'1". Mitchell's got the wingspan that he can kind of overcome some of that, but there are just some backcourts that are going to be really tough matchups for those two just because they're small. And so there are some real concerns with the Jazz. I do still think we can make the argument. They're just not, I wouldn't put them in that tier with the Lakers, the Clippers, and the Bucks. Maybe they're in the next tier with like the Raptors, Celtics, I don't know. That again, I think I can make the argument. I'm just not quite as confident as I was several months ago. this is one of the questions I kind of alluded to earlier. This is from Chris at Link42192. Isn't it a travesty that Doug McDermott isn't in the 3-point contest? I don't know about the word travesty. I think I just pinned this one because, again, I think some of the reactions to these snubs are kind of ridiculous. Doug McDermott is averaging double figures and shooting 45% from three. He certainly has an argument to be in. I'll continue to pound the drum that Joe Ingles should be in there. I ran the numbers earlier. The only two players in the league who have more threes and a higher three-point percentage than Joe Ingles since the start of the 2015-16 season, I think that's what it was, so like the last 5 years, it's just J.J. Redick and Stephen Curry. Joe Ingles has clearly been one of the best shooters in the league for years now. He even joked about this on the Low Post recently, so I thought, well, maybe the NBA will hear this and they'll ask him, but he just tweeted today and said he's never been asked. So here I am complaining about people complaining about snubs, and then I complain about Joe Ingles being snubbed. So I'm part of the problem. Okay, last question. Oh, I don't need to answer this one now. At Frank Cooney asked if the Celtics would be better with Capella. And as I explained, he is now an Atlanta Hawk. So anyway, thanks for sticking with me, guys. Hopefully this was fun. Reach out to us on Twitter or the reviews on iTunes. That would be even better. Let us know what you think about this new idea to have these more regular mailbags. This is like the funnest part of podcasting to me, is engaging with the listeners, with the Twitter followers. It's I think it's infinitely more fun to just sit here and answer questions than to try and come up with like gimmicky ideas for podcasts, because maybe I'm just not that creative. But anyway, I sincerely appreciate the engagement. If you want to find me on Twitter, those of you whose questions I answered, you already know where I'm at. You answered my tweet. But I'm at Andrew D. Bailey. Dan is at Dan Favalli. The show is at Hardwood Knox. The podcast network is at Blue Wire Pods. As always, we encourage you to rate, review, and subscribe to the show. And until next time, we leave you with a shout out to Benno Udry and Kyle Anderson.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.